Here on 20 Minute Tabletop, we're not known for having our finger on the pulse of the latest releases, but in Tom's last episode, he really shook that up by talking about the latest hotness on Kickstarter, Horror on the Orient Express. So I thought I'd bring things back down and maybe meet him halfway with a game that was originally released in 1996, that died and was resurrected twice, and now is playable in 2024 with new expansions coming out all the time. That game is Netrunner. So I'm Kev, and this is a solo cast for me today. And this all came about from a conversation I was having at the gaming club. It's actually one of the Malifaux nights I attended. And I made a passing comment to someone else who's a Magic the Gathering fan, as I am. And I said, well, of course, it's the best constructed card game ever made. And there was a silence. And he said, well, what about Netrunner? I thought, well, I haven't really heard of Netrunner. And he explained to me that it's a cyberpunk asymmetrical card game. And it really piqued my interest because I love cyberpunk. Some of my favourite books are Neuromancer and Snow Crash. And one of my all-time favourite games, a solitaire game, well, it's solitaire in the sense it's 1 to 5 players, is Ricky Royal's Renegade, which I absolutely love. It's kind of a card-slinging, deck-building game where you play against a supermassive computer which is working to destroy the world, in effect, and you are building hands and just engaging in brilliant cyberpunk theme and using loads of jargon, which these are all things that I love. So to hear that there was a collectible card game, which then died, that became a living card game, and as you know, we love living card games, particularly Arkham Horror, and Tom loves the Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings. This is a project that I thought I can really get behind, and to find out that it's now alive and well after having died twice is just a dream come true. So, let's talk a little bit about the history first. And in order to do so, we need to cover a concept which probably many of you will already be familiar with, and that is the difference between a collectible card game or trading card game, CCG or TCG, and a living card game, LCG. So an LCG, living card game, is answer to the age-old problem, as Richard Garfield himself, the designer of both Magic the Gathering and Netrunner, he said, well, one of the things that I'm concerned about with Magic the Gathering, and this was the early days of Magic, is that the rich kids will just win because they'll buy all the rare and powerful cards. And obviously, that fear came to life because that's exactly what happens in Magic the Gathering and many collectible card games where there's an element of rarity. What Richard Garfield actually wanted, according to an interview that I read about him, was that he wanted many of the powerful cards to be in the common or uncommon. And that was true in Magic, because I think Black Lotuses and Diabolic Tutors and things of this were either common or uncommon. So they were available to everyone, and the more interesting or rare cards were the rare and mythics. But it comes as no surprise that when a card company that is specifically set up to sell cards and make money has a hand in it, then that's going to end up in a dynamic where you're hiding rare cards in packs to encourage people to buy more packs to get the best cards. So in theory, where everyone's buying and opening their own packs, you know, you've got a fair chance of opening a mythic. But what, of course, happens is you get a secondary market and these cards get massively inflated. I think the original Power 9 are selling for hundreds, if not thousands of pounds on eBay now. And there's the same kind of Magic the Gathering finance, which we've talked about in previous episodes, where individual cards can be worth an absolute fortune to build a competitive deck and cost, you know, upwards of £1,000. So Fantasy Flight came up with a solution to this problem, which is the living card game. So rather than randomly distributing the powerful cards throughout booster boxes all across the world, they came up with a release model called the living card game, where every single player would buy a core box or a deluxe box for a particular cycle, and they'd have exactly the same card. They'd then release booster packs or upgrade packs, depending on the game, they were called different things. So in Arkham Horror, they're called Mythos packs, Lord of the Rings, they were called Adventure Packs, and Android Netrunner ended up having the same thing, where they were called Data Packs, but they were all in essence the same kind of concept, which is more cards to increase the card pool, give greater gameplay options, but everyone has the same access, provided they've bought the packs, which are all priced the same. There is no variability or randomness in the content. Everyone has access to exactly the same card pool. There is no advantage through throwing additional money at the game. Now, this wasn't the case with the first iteration of Netrunner. Designed by Richard Garfield, who's the legendary designer of Magic the Gathering, Keyforge, Netrunner, and probably many others that I can't think of right now, and released by Wizards of the Coast, the game apparently did quite well. It was really before my time. I was in my mid-teens and never really heard of this kind of world. I think I maybe got a role-playing magazine, RPG magazine, when I was maybe 14 or 15, amongst the many white dwarves that I bought. And I remember there being Vampire the Jihad, some card pack on the front, and I remember looking through, and Magic the Gathering was in there, but I don't remember Netrunner. But either way, it had a pretty short run and ran from 1996 to about the turn of the millennium. And it was another couple of years before Fantasy Flight, great redeveloper and ultimately killer of many of my favourite games, took the project up, and they re-released it in the Android universe, which is kind of a fictional setting of their own. So they kept the cyberpunk theme. But from what I understand, it's quite a complicated intellectual property arrangement, with many of the terms, artworks, names, trademarks, gameplay mechanics all falling under different kinds of intellectual property laws. So it's very messy, and from what I understand is the reason why the game eventually died for a second time in 2012, because Wizards of the Coast removed the license, which, again, a little bit of digging around on the internet, I'm not to know, but Asmodee versus Hasbro. Hasbro owns Wizards of the Coast. Asmodee owns Fantasy Flight. The great conspiracy is it's the corporate wranglings of Asmodee versus Hasbro, who are big stock market style competitors. So this ultimately brought the downfall of the second iteration of Netrunner, Android Netrunner, released as a living card game by Fantasy Flight. Now, it was really popular with Fantasy Flight, and in fact, they'd actually just released a revised core set, and it was cut maybe a month or two after they re-released this. It came as a big shock to everyone, and it had such a loyal and enthusiastic following in the gaming world. Now, there's a couple of reasons that I might suggest this was the case. The first is that it's really, really different to your average, and this is a new term that I've learned, which I really like, dude battlers. So Magic the Gathering, you're playing as a planeswalker, essentially a powerful wizard against another powerful wizard, two dudes battling in a game format known as dude battlers. Anyway, never heard of it, but apparently it's a thing. This is not a dude battler. It's an asymmetric card game. We're going to discuss the gameplay a lot more in a few minutes. This is where you play as a hacker against a corporation, and both have totally separate win conditions and rules, effectively, for how you interact with your game pieces. Really, really interesting. The second thing that Android Netrunner and its current iteration, which is from Null Signal Games, which is a fan collective, again, we'll discuss in a moment, is their commitment to EDI, equality, diversity, and inclusion. So they've got a really broad range of people in their art, different races, genders, and outlooks on life. And I always believe that your player base will reflect the kinds of people in the game. So if you make an effort to include everyone, everyone will feel more inclined to play your game. And my interactions with the community just through the Discord server, the Green Level Clearance Discord, has been really positive. And it seems to be an unusually welcoming and friendly community, particularly in the context of some of the TCGs, which can be stereotyped as less welcoming in some cases, certainly some of my experiences that I've had at organized play Magic events. And then to cap all this off, you've got a format which doesn't require you to throw bucket loads of cash at it to be competitive. And I think you've got the mix for a long-lasting game which has died twice, been resurrected twice. In its current format, it's now been resurrected by the fans. Basically a fan collective originally called Nissei, which is now rebranded as Null Signal Games. And I think that just shows how special the game really is, that people have been motivated to go out of the way to effectively create their own games company, although it's not a company in the traditional sense, organization, to resurrect this card game and produce content for it at the very highest standard. It's really quite amazing, the level of the fan-produced artworks, games, mechanics, release schedule. It's incredible. Now, before we get into the gameplay, from what I understand, this game is now around here to stay. I've already hinted at the complicated licensing agreements. It's no longer called Netrunner. It's officially compatible with Netrunner. all the card pool can be used with any of the Living Card Game era, at least, cards that have been released by Fantasy Flight. But the game can stand alone in a format called Startup, which is just uses the modern Null Signal era games. So there's loads of options and even an organised play scene that you can get involved with. And what's really encouraging is they've made tremendous efforts to make sure there's no copyrights being broken. They're not using any of the iconography or artworks from any of the previous editions. And my limited understanding of intellectual property is that you can't copyright the actual game rules as such. So they're able to use the same core rule system, but with their own custom-made iconography and artwork, meaning it's all above board and it's here to stay, which is really exciting if you're wanting to get involved right now. So enough of the history, let's get into the actual game itself. I've said it's an asymmetric game. In other words, it's a two-player game and both of the players represent a different aspect of the cyberpunk world. So one player will play a corporation, the kind of megacorps that you see in novels such as Neuromancer. But in Netrunner, you're choosing from one of four different corporations. Hasbiroid, who are making cybernetic humans and androids. Jinteki, who are like a huge biotech firm who are engineering humans with Gmods. You've got NBN, which is sort of like an evil Fox News network. And you can play them as like a World of Warcraft MMO, or you could characterize them as a sports channel, Sky Sports, or even a breaking news WeChat type organization that are trying to invade every aspect of your life. And finally, you've got the Wayland Consortium, named after its founder, Jack Wayland, who created Jack's Beanstalk, which is a space elevator using some kind of magic nanotech that managed to get an elevator from Earth to the moon. So they're developing and mining on the lunar surface and are involved in all kinds of industries from logistics all the way to mega construction projects, both on Earth and on the moon. So the corporation player will choose an ID, which is the type of company within those faction types, and they'll give some deck building rules. They might say that you've got to have 40 cards in your deck and you're allowed to choose cards from outside of faction using influence from other factions. So you build your deck, but in your deck will be hidden a number of agenda cards. So agendas are the main way of winning the game. The corporation will win the game by scoring out 7 agenda points from these cards that are hidden in their deck. Now, an agenda, a single agenda card can have between 1 and 3 agenda points. All there are clever ways of boosting how many points a single card can have. And obviously the agenda cards that have carry more points are going to take you more resources to score. So with that main game objective in mind, let's talk about how you're going to get these agenda cards to the table. In Netrunner, as the corporation, your board state, your actual side of the table, represents a number of computer servers. And each of these servers have got different names. And this is where some of the jargon of the game come in. And it's a little confusing at first, but I actually find it really thematic. The corporation's hand is called HQ. The deck is called R&D. And the discard pile is called Archives, which all sounds a little bit clunky, but it actually saves a lot of space on the text, and it also helps you immerse yourself in that world. The Runner actually has different names again for their version of these three different piles of cards. So in addition to the HQ, Archives, and R&D, you can also create remote servers, and you do this by installing a card, i.e. playing a card face down, and that is a remote server. And you can have any number of remote servers. And unlike games like Magic the Gathering or many others where you've got to pay some kind of cost to get a card out, you can just place a card from your hand face down. And it's only at the point where it's revealed or rezzed in the game that you'll start to pay its cost in credits. Now, each player starts off with 5 credits. And one of the actions you can do in the game is to click for a credit. In other words, gain some of the in-game resources. Now, you can already hear that I'm using a lot of jargon and it's quite confusing at first, but you soon get used to it. So throughout the game, the corporation will be installing these cards face down. And if everything goes to plan, at some point, they'll be able to res them, pay the cost for it. They may have an agenda which costs 5 credits to res and it will score them 3 agenda points. And if they can do that, then they're some of the way to their 7 points and winning the game. But as you can imagine, life isn't that simple. And on the opposite side of the table, you've got the runner, the net runner, or the hacker, who's trying to hack into these servers and cause merry havoc and steal the agendas. And the hacker or the runner will win the game by stealing 7 agenda points. In other words, getting hold of those agenda cards from the corporation just by accessing them. And similar to the corporations, there's a few different factions of runners in the game. So you've got the Anarchs, who are, as the name suggests, anarchists, who are there trying to bring down the system. You've got criminals who are just in it for the money. They're all about stealing credits and using inside dodgy connections to get access to the company servers. And finally, you've got the Shapers, who are like supreme hackers, who are doing it just for the love and the challenge of breaking into these corporation systems. So the first part of the asymmetry is that the corporation effectively gets 3 actions on their turn, and the runner gets 4 actions. And one of the 4 actions that the runner can do is to make a run on the server. And this means they're going to target one of the servers, which of course is a pile of cards, maybe the hand, discard, a remote server. And should they manage to access that server and reveal an agenda card, they can immediately steal it. And however many points it is, a 2-point agenda, they're now 2 points to their 7 of winning the game. But again, it's not that simple, because the corporation will be protecting their servers with what's known as ICE. And this is a term from Neuromancer, William Gibson's classic sci-fi novel, Intrusion Countermeasure Electronics. In other words, firewalls and antivirus systems and things of this nature. So these are effectively the defenders. In Magic the Gathering terms, these are like creatures. They're your way of interacting with the other player. So you may have placed an agenda face down as the corporation, and you have now protected it with some ice. This is also placed face down. When the runner decides to run that server, they'll bump into the ice, and the corporation now has to choose, do they have enough money to pay the cost to turn this face up? If they do, then it'll have some kind of negative effect on the runner. They may have to discard a card. They may have to end the run, which has wasted one of their actions. And another asymmetric lose condition for the runner is if they run out of cards in their hand, or grip as it's known to the runner, then they automatically lose the game. This is what's known as being flatlined. Now, you can lose cards through either interaction with the ice, or maybe the corporation has got cards which will deal damage, and the damage is rendered in the game of Netrunner by cards being discarded from the runner's hand. But of course, it's not that simple, because in the same way that the corporation can protect their servers with ice, the runner or the hacker can attack that ice with their own icebreakers. So they're using their resources, their credits, to produce viruses and other ways of circumnavigating the cards that are protecting the agendas in these servers. But you know what I'm going to say next? It's not that simple, because the corporation is not only hiding agendas in their servers, but also powerful ambushes. So one of the huge draws of this game is the bluffing element. And because all the cards are placed face down by the corporation, you don't know whether it's a dangerous ambush which may flatline you and knock you out of the game, or whether it's an agenda that you need to go after. So constantly there's a tension within the game of trying to bluff out your opponent, never quite having enough resources to do exactly what you want. And it's not a game where just the best deck wins. A good player will be able to outbluff their opponent and score with a worse deck in theory. Now, it's so hard to go deep into this in just 20 minutes, but hopefully I've given you enough to really tickle your fancy and make you want to play and investigate this game. And if you do, how do you get involved? Well, like I said, it's run by Null Signal Games, and this is a non-profit fan collective which are re-releasing the game, all the rules, all the cards, for free. And what's more, there is no limits on the number of cards you can proxy in a deck at official events. As long as they've got opaque backs on them, you can just print off from the internet whatever you want from the whole of the back history and crack on and play. So you don't actually need to pay anything to play this game at all. But if you did want physical copies of the cards, as I have done, because I really want to support this project, it is amazing what these people are doing, then the way to do it is to buy the System Gateway, which is going to give you a basic Corp and Runner deck, and also a few deck building options. But then the next stage will be to get the system update, and each of these packs about £23-24, and give you everything you need to play a really satisfying experience with loads of deck building options. If you wanted to play the startup format, there's also a few different expansions. There's currently one which is set in an alternate Brazil at the moment, which is really interesting. You can again buy those expansions or just proxy the cards that you want. Similarly, there's a standard format, and the standard format is the huge card pool, which includes all of the Netrunner Android world from Fantasy Flight. Again, you can either buy these off eBay or, what most people do, just print off the cards you need, because we're talking hundreds and hundreds of cards. And as a new player, you're going to have no idea. So you're going to be net decking from netrunner.db. Now, the way I learnt the game, I'm still very much learning. It's quite complicated in the essence of timing windows and things like that. The subtleties are complicated, but the basics are pretty easy. And the way you want to learn the game, I would suggest, is by going to chiriboga.net. A link will be in the show notes. And that is an artificial intelligence opponent, and it allows you to choose decks and play against this AI opponent, and you really get a feel for the game. Obviously, you're going to lose a little bit of the face-to-face bluffing element, but if you want to play remotely and have that bluffing element, then jinteki.net is a free, completely free, and very well-developed online in-browser experience where you can play with the whole of the past card pool against opponents from all around the world, including world champions. The community is amazing. The resources are amazing. The card pool is growing and is amazing. And the ability to play online for free at the highest standards, all the way down to startups with in-game chat, it just blows my mind of how well-developed, how professional, and how lovely everyone in this community is. I really, really encourage you to get involved, especially considering it doesn't cost you a penny to do so. So we'll definitely be doing some more Netrunner content. I know Tom played it in its Android days, and I'm yet to get involved with the Nisei/Null Signal era games, but this is definitely something that I want to revisit, because it's an incredible game. And if you can't tell, I'm all in. I absolutely love it. So that brings us to a point where we're going to wrap up. Now, all the usual podcast stuff. If you enjoy this, we'd love it if you shared it and then left us a review on your favourite podcatcher, because that helps us grow the reach. We're now approaching over 1,000 listens. We're getting loads of subscribers, so we absolutely love talking to you on our Instagram page as well. And Tom's doing some kind of magic on TikTok if you use that. I don't particularly use it, but I do know that Tom's really excited about it and he's putting content out there all the time. And the final way you could help the show, and me in particular, if this is of interest, is I have a business called Tabletop Upgrades. You can see my website, tabletopupgrades.co.uk. I'm a full-time manufacturer of gaming accessories. I've just released a line of Netrunner products that support this wonderful game. Some lovely two-sided multicolored tokens that are, you know, just add that extra little bit of tabletop presence to the game. So if that interests you, check that out at tabletopupgrades.co.uk. And either way, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.